You are listening to Birthplace of Next, the podcast where city officials and partners discuss the latest news and developments in Dayton that make it a livable, sustainable, and innovative community. I'm Andrew Esteves with the City's Office of Communications and Public Affairs. Today I'm with Brandon McLean, who is a magistrate and acting judge with the Dayton Municipal Court, and we're going to be talking about the issues surrounding the eviction process and how that works through the court system and how that plays out for both tenants and landlords. But first, I want to open it up. Brandon, would you just give us a quick 30-second elevator pitch for what a magistrate is?
Absolutely, and thank you for having me on today. A magistrate is a judicial officer that oversees or presides over civil, criminal, and traffic matters. In the city of Dayton specifically, preside over landlord-tenant issues, debtors' examinations, garnishments, attachments, in addition to civil matters that are $15,000 and under. That does also include small claims cases, which jurisdictionally are $6,000 and under. All of the traffic cases in the city of Dayton make its way to Dayton Municipal Court, in addition to also being responsible for conducting arraignments on criminal matters that also occur within the jurisdictional boundaries.
Okay. Well, that covers a lot of ground. The whole idea, I think, behind a magistrate is also to sort of like take some of the load off of the judges in terms of what they're doing in court.
Absolutely, to take some of the load off and also to assist in handling cases where there could be potentially a conflict or an absence. A magistrate essentially oversees, presides, and provides decisions and orders just like a judge would, except a judge is elected, whereas a magistrate is appointed.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. That's magistrate in a nutshell. So on to the topic for today's show. We are going to be talking about evictions. This is a pretty complicated subject, but it does have a lot of impacts for people who are being evicted, and it also impacts the people who own the properties as well. So why don't you just go ahead and tell us what exactly is an eviction?
Okay, so an eviction in Ohio, and the reason why I preface it with saying in Ohio is that it differs from state to state. In Ohio, essentially, an eviction is the only legal vehicle that exists for a landlord to oust a tenant. And this becomes very important because what we have seen in states like Ohio is that when an eviction is not commenced correctly, it leads to potentially illegal eviction tactics being used, whereas a landlord sometimes may turn off electricity, they may turn off utilities, they may change locks. All of those things, when exercised by a landlord, create a negative impact on the tenant and subjects the landlord to civil responsibility or liability in that case. And essentially that tenant can bring a lawsuit against that landlord to recoup for any kind of damage or harm that resulted due to that landlord's illegal eviction tactics.
Okay. So if a landlord decides to do coercive tactics like turn off the power, turn off the water, whatever, The tenants do have rights in that situation, but they have to exercise those rights in the proper way. So
that's correct.
I think of where a lot of people go wrong with this is that they will withhold rent from the landlord, but you can't just withhold rent. There's a whole legal process that surrounds that process, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Anytime there's a legal a tactic that's exercised by a landlord, a tenant has a multitude of rights. Specifically, what they need to do is make that official complaint with their court. So in Dayton, it would be with the Dayton Municipal Court. They would visit the clerk's office. They would then be able to request an emergency hearing. And at that point in time, the court would be able to notify that landlord. There would be a hearing conducted, and if those illegal tactics have been exercised by a landlord without the landlord having went through a legal eviction proceeding, then at that point in time, that landlord is going to, be beholden and going to have to answer for their conduct to the court.
Right, and I think we're, and this is just me as a layperson here, I mean, I'm no legal expert, but I think just based on my experience, where a lot of people go wrong is the landlord will try some coercive tactic like turning off the power. Mm-hmm. And then the tenant will say, well, okay, fine, then if you're going to do that, I'm not going to pay rent.
That's right.
But that's not the right way to go about it, because if they don't pay rent, then they're actually in arrears on the rent, and that actually works against them. There's a whole process. They still have to pay the rent, but it goes into an escrow account, correct?
That's correct.
So it's being held by the court to wait the outcome of the case, correct?
Yes. So in that case, anytime there's an illegal tactic that's being used, or generally speaking, what we see a lot of times in our cases, what I see is that you have tenants who are unhappy with the condition of the premises. It may be, for example, leaky pipes or mold or rodents infestation. It could even be the fact that the landlord is restricting their use of garage or a certain portion of the premises. At that point in time, they may have, you know, provided notice, had difficult and consistent conversations with that landlord, and to no avail, nothing has changed. They become frustrated, and then they begin to do what we call self-help remedies. Self-help remedies are not permitted in Ohio. The only legal course of action that that person can do in that case would be to begin to, first, they have to be current in their rent. Okay, that's a legal standing requirement. They have to be current in their rental obligation to the landlord, and then they would begin posting their rent with the clerk of courts through a process called rent escrow. And at that point in time, the case will be scheduled for an escrow hearing. And then that landlord would be essentially on the hook to answer for why the condition of the premises, if it's found to be in effect something that touches habitability of the premises. They could be a legal order could be referred to housing. The rent could be reduced to a lower amount. They could be given time to make repairs. Or if it's so egregious and it affects habitability in a way that affects the safety of the tenant, the lease agreement could be terminated at that point in time. There is a multitude of discretion that the court has in making the decision about how to best address those issues that the tenant may bring in an escrow action.
Okay. Well, that's all good information there, and that actually taught me a little bit there. I mean, what I knew is that you can't just stop paying rent.
Correct.
Right. And they seem logical, but that is not a legal remedy to your problem.
That's correct.
It actually puts you in a bad situation as far as the court's concerned. If you haven't, if you're not, like you said, if you're not current on your rent, there's a whole lot of stuff that goes out the window at that point as far as the protections that you have from the law, right?
Absolutely. And then when we have individuals, unfortunately, who begin to exercise self-help remedies, I mean, I have seen premises that are deplorable, infestation, rodents, even holes that may lead to the outside exterior of the premises, and the individual began to start self-withholding rent, and then there's a non-payment of rent action that is commenced by the landlord. That tenant begins to try to present evidence about the condition of the premises, and under Ohio law, that is impermissible. That is not properly submitted evidence, because that should have been through an escrow action, and that person cannot have the defense of the condition of a premises in a non-payment of rent action when they haven't properly, number one, been current, and number two, posted that money with the clerk of courts through a rent escrow process.
Gotcha. So, yeah, like I said, it seems off the top of the head, oh, well, I'm just not going to pay rent because you're not treating me right. But that is not, the rent's got to get paid.
The rent has
you're either
to
paying the landlord or you're paying the court, but the rent's got to get paid.
Yes. And the good thing, just to bring it full circle, the good thing and the important thing is that the court has that discretion to take that money that has been deposited and to apportion it appropriately. Let's say, for instance, that the condition of the premises are so egregious that you have been unable to take a shower, you've been unable to use the restroom or cook dinner or even live in the premises. That court, the magistrate at that point in time would have the discretion to say you have been unable to reside in the premises and enjoy the premises as is your legal right. And as such, I'm going to reduce the rent for next month down to zero or down to $1. And I'm going to release two-thirds of the money, for example, that has been paid and posted with the clerk of courts in rent escrow. I'm going to release that to the tenant. If it's so egregious, and let's say, for instance, the landlord has been given the opportunity to remedy the defect and has not done so, the court can take an additional step and say, listen, I believe that this is has a great impact on the health and the safety of the tenant. I'm going to terminate this lease agreement, and the tenant needs to be vacated from the premises by the last day of next month at 11:59 p.m. No additional monies is to be paid to the landlord. They could reduce all of that to a order that would then govern the relationship that we know as a tenant-landlord relationship. And that becomes very important, specifically when tenants are like, I don't feel like I'm being heard. The landlord isn't respecting my position.
All right. So let's look at how do eviction cases start? Where does that whole process begin with the courts?
Okay, so every landlord in Ohio must give a, generally speaking, let's say, for example, if it's a notice for, let's say, non-payment of rent, okay, that case is going to commence with the landlord serving that tenant, generally speaking, with a 3-day notice. That 3-day notice is going to be a notice to vacate. And so that tenant, if they don't vacate the premises in those 3 days, that landlord can then legally file what's known as a forcible entry and detainer complaint. At that point in time, the matter would then be scheduled. Generally speaking, this in about 3 to 5 weeks. And then the tenant and the landlord would appear in court. And at that point in time, the landlord would need to present evidence that establishes they have standing, i.e. they're the owner of the property, that notices were properly served, that the notices were specific enough to place the tenant in a position where they could properly defend against the allegations that are alleged. And then at that point in time, the tenant would likewise have the opportunity to present evidence. For example, it could be, I am current on my rent. I have receipts. Here are the receipts. This becomes very important because at trial, oftentimes tenants come to court, but they don't have the evidence needed to support their defense.
Kind of like going to the accountant without your receipts, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Yeah, you have to be able to back up your claims. You can say you're current on your rent, but unless you're getting receipts or have canceled checks to show, that's really, yeah, it's just hearsay at that point.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, receipts, independent witnesses, something that's above he say, she say. And I think oftentimes that's where things kind of get lost in translation, is that certain actions that are being alleged to have been taken cannot be supported because they don't have documentation, they don't have independent witnesses, and ultimately that makes it very difficult for them to prevail in their claim of defense.
So if someone's being evicted, do they need to have an attorney?
They don't need to necessarily have an attorney. It's their decision if they would like to pursue an attorney. It is not a case where the court would appoint them an attorney. However, likewise, I do think it's worth noting that roughly 85% of landlords have legal representation. And likewise, 85% of tenants do not have legal representation. However, they can contact, we have great local resources here in the city of Dayton. They can contact legal aid. They can contact the Greater Dayton Volunteer Lawyers Project to possibly be referred out. And at that point in time, they can begin to start trying to determine what would be their best course of action. But they do have a right to stand on their own and represent their own interests through a process we call being a pro se litigant. However, for those that do choose to represent their own interests, I would just offer the information to them that they are held to the same legal standard as an attorney or any other individual that would avail themselves to the court.
Yeah, that's kind of a lopsided power dynamic there, it sounds like. I mean, you know, if you've got 85% of your landlords coming in with representation and 85% of the tenants don't have it, then, you know, it's really kind of hard to fight on an even playing field there, you know, because, I mean, I would personally would never go to court without some sort of representation. And I know people are in situations where they can't afford an attorney, but you outlined several organizations, and I'll even throw one out there too, is ABLE, Advocates for Basic Legal Equality, which is a local organization that can help people in some cases with eviction. Not all the time, but I know that they work in that space.
Absolutely.
So that's ABLE, A-B-L-E, Advocates for Basic Legal Equality. You mentioned Legal Aid of Southern Ohio, is it?
Yep, and they work, I believe, now in tandem with ABLE.
With ABLE.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Yeah, so keep those in mind as resources. So what should a tenant be doing once they get their court date?
At that point in time, I think that is very helpful for them to know the overarching process so they can then make a determination about what's going to be in my best interest. It could be a situation where they agree with the landlord. And in that case, if they admit that they have breached the lease agreement by, for example, being behind in rent, their next option, I believe, needs to be to essentially, if they plan on trying to continue to reside in the premises, talk to the landlord and see if they're willing to work out alternate arrangements. You never know what the answer is unless you ask, right? And so in our community, we also have the Dayton Mediation Center. And so if a tenant fell on hard times, and we all have fallen on hard times before, they could have lost their job, they may have had a sickness or a death in the family, something that put them back financially, but they're able to maneuver past that challenge, that's something they need to let that landlord know. Let them know where they have came from, let them know where they currently are, and if there's a way that it can be worked out, I think that's something that they should try if they plan on residing at the premises past, you know, the eviction process. There also are situations where the eviction process begins. That individual at the point in time, after talking to the landlord, they decide that they are able to work out the agreement. Let the court know. We have members from the Dayton Mediation Center who are often present in the courtroom at that time, and they can help try to assist individuals to avoid an eviction conviction or to avoid an eviction judgment on their record. And that becomes very important when we look at longstanding circumstances, because just because you're not currently in a situation that you want to be doesn't mean that in the future you won't be. And so I do think it's important to keep those options open. And so if an individual, you know, desires to work out an agreement and the plaintiff and landlord in agreement, the Dayton Mediation Center has representation that can reduce it to writing. They can even schedule, you know, they'll make a determination based upon the agreement of parties about move-out dates. The court reads all those things into the record, has the parties agree upon them, and then it becomes adopted into the record, and that document governs the case. And that's important because that person avoids an eviction judgment on their record.
And that is always a good thing, because if you can keep that eviction judgment off your record, that increases your chances of being able to find decent housing in the future. Because that's a real black mark when you have that on your record, because anybody who's going to be renting a property is going to look at that and say, oh, well, they've already been evicted from a property. I don't want that hassle. I don't want that. You know, I don't want to have to deal with that. But, you know, you mentioned that the mediation center, you know, I've worked a lot with those folks over the years that I've been with the city, and I can tell you they're doing yeoman's work over there, man. I mean, they really are. And honestly, I think when you get down to it, I mean, nobody really wants to get evicted. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that landlords really want to evict people either, because let's face it, it's a hassle. You got, you know, you're a landlord, you got to hire a lawyer, you got to go to court. It's a time-consuming process. It's costing you money. Then the property's going to sit vacant. You got to line up another renter. Right. I mean, it's just a hassle for everybody. No one wants to get evicted, and I don't think anybody really wants to do the eviction either.
That's right.
So if you can find a middle ground, and through mediation, that is possible. If both parties are willing to sit down and talk, then, you know, you can find a decent outcome to that situation. So, you know, think about mediation, folks. It's out there. They are unsung heroes working for the city out there every day, trying to help folks figure stuff out.
That's right. Also, too, you know, we have in our midst, in our community, a multitude of local resources that are willing to assist individuals who may have fallen behind in their rent if they're given notice. There are cases that come before me where individuals have admittedly fallen behind in rent. They're able to make contact with local resources. That local resource verifies that amount with the landlord, and they reduce payment after they have verified that the amount is delinquent. And that becomes very important as well, because they essentially have repaired a relationship. They have helped restore in a lot of ways, a sense of pride, you know, in that person. Eviction, a lot of times I see folks walk in, I see two things a lot of times. The first one being anger and the other being shame. And a lot of times what you see through resources or through alternate means is that people begin to start not just saying, okay, this happened or this happened to me, but they start saying, what can we do to move past this? And I think that's very important because, to your point, no one wants to be evicted. And I've never seen a landlord be proud to evict a tenant either, because up until a point, they had a good relationship. They had a decent relationship, and then something happened. And so I think that keeping those lines of communication open to have those difficult conversations are important to move past what happens, to start looking at and addressing how it happened.
Exactly. Yeah. So is there anything else that you'd like to add from your perspective as a magistrate?
I would just encourage the parties in these actions to keep an open mind and to focus on why they are in court as opposed to how they arrived at court. Oftentimes, I think that emotions become essentially the opponent of good solutions. And so emotions prevent people from listening. Emotions prevent people sometimes from reacting appropriately. Leave the emotions in the car. When you walk in court, think about why you're there. And if you're serious about trying to help the person, let that be known. However, in the same token, if you've reached your breaking point and you know, the law supports moving forward in a way that you know, supports that outcome, that's okay too. But I do encourage people to try alternate routes when possible and when necessary. I think it's important, and I think that when issues can be resolved absent court intervention, I think we owe it to each other to do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, when things escalate to the point where you're going to court over it, you've already had some sort of a serious breakdown in the communication mm-hmm. process there. Yes. or being able to work with each other. Yeah. And I can see that, I mean, the whole emotional thing. Yeah, I mean, if you've got a moisture problem in your home and you think that's what's making your children sick,
yes,
then, and you're blaming that on the landlord and they're not wanting to do anything about it. Yeah. I mean, emotions are going to run high in that, you know, and I totally get that, but yeah, it's really best to not bring that anger into the courtroom with you.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up at this point. For the listeners out there, this is basically installment one of what's going to be an ongoing series with Magistrate McLean on issues surrounding rental housing. So this, our inaugural episode here covering the topic of eviction. I just realized you do have, you talk about your self-help center at the court there.
Yes. The court, we have a self-help center that is facilitated, overseen, and operated by the Dayton Municipal Court Clerk of Courts Office. And they have documents that are available for pro se litigants. They have general information. They don't give legal advice, but they have a lot of helpful information. And so also keep that in mind when you're visiting the court. They may have a document that has generally asked questions or resources that could be available that can assist you in being able to work through your issue.
Yeah, this center is right there in the lobby of the courts building at the corner of 3rd and Wilkinson, or excuse me, 3rd and Perry. 3rd and Perry, and the courts building. It's right in the main lobby, right off of the main entrance. It's to the right. There's all kinds of literature there. They even have computers that you can use mm-hmm. to do research. So there are, that's an, a nice resource that maybe, you know, if you can't afford representation, at least get a leg up on representing yourself or knowing what the legal ins and outs are that's of right. the process.
That's right.
All right. Well, thanks for being on the show, Mr. McLean. It's good having you here.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And thanks for listening, folks. We will be back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening to Birthplace of Next, a publication of the City of Dayton's Office of Communications and Public Affairs. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you won't miss the latest news about what's happening in Dayton. If you have questions or feedback for us, please email cityhall@daytonohio.gov.